Pop Health Podcast is a public service of 24-Hour Home Care. So this is an episode in which we learn more about how concepts of the Affordable Care Act and managed care have actually been around for many, many years. And we're actually going to interview the president of a group called CAPG. CAPG is in about 44 states, and they're the leading association in the country representing physician organizations practicing capitated coordinated care. So Zach, I'm really excited to learn how the ACA learned from CAPG. And while there are many models of healthcare out there, what CAPG practices and helps oversee and helps advocate for is what's known as the model. And I heard of the Ohio State University, but I've never heard of the model in healthcare. So folks, take a listen. Zach, I really enjoyed this episode with you. And yeah.
Absolutely. And you may also have noticed that we've begun releasing an episode weekly. We have so many great guests in store for you, including California Health and Human Service Secretary Diana Dooley, Providence St. Joseph CEO Eric Wexler, President and CEO of Keck Hospital of USC, Rod Hanners. So please follow us on iTunes in the podcast store or on Stitcher so you don't miss an episode. We also appreciate if you could like and comment on Pop Health Podcast so that we can continue to attract more listeners. You can also find us online at pophealthpodcast.com and find me on Twitter at @pophealthzach. Or Gavin on Twitter at
Gavin Pop Health.
We'd love to connect with you there. As always, thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
So Don, we always like to open our episodes learning a bit more about our guests outside of the workplace. What is something people may not know about you or might surprise the audience about you?
Well, you know, in addition to my wife and son, who are an enormous part of my life, I have two large Great Danes that are massively high maintenance, entirely lovable, and I dote on them to a ridiculous extent and do an awful lot of baby talking around the house. It's completely embarrassing.
Literal large parts of your life.
Yes, yes.
So the last time I touched a Great Dane, it was its teeth on my chest.
Oh, really?
I went to shake the hand of my friend's dad, and the dog was protective. The dog had never met me before. Mm-hmm. So I literally got bit, luckily just very minor, by a Great Dane. So I will probably never purchase or have a Great Dane at our house, but I'm sure they're great dogs. So a little bit more about you. You have a background in law.
Mm-hmm.
So when you were thinking about a career in law, any idea you'd end up where you are today? Can you kind of walk us through that process?
Well, the short answer is no. I didn't imagine that I'd be the CEO of a professional association in the midst of an ongoing healthcare reform in the United States. I did not imagine that, no. Very happy that's now the case. Quirks of fate caused it to occur. I think you've asked me what I've been doing. So I practiced law, general civil practice, for many years, and one thing led to another. There was the representation of a hospital that itself turned into a hospital chain, that itself turned into an integrated healthcare system complete with a couple of health plans and plenty of medical groups and a bunch of hospitals. And so all of that got me deeply into healthcare. And then there occurred the Med Partners bankruptcy, which was a big deal, certainly in California, particularly Southern California, in around 90 or 89, I think it was. And to accelerate to the end of the story, I was elected the chairman of the creditors committee of that bankruptcy. And that bankruptcy involved about 1.5 million lives and put sort of in jeopardy the delegated model, as we call it here in California.
Okay.
None of this was well known to me at the time, frankly, in terms of implications, et cetera, et cetera. But so there I sat as chair of this creditors committee, and around the table there were health plans, there were hospitals, there were physicians, and there were other providers, all interested in having their creditor claims paid. They wanted their money, of course, but they were equally interested in the survival of the model. And so I quickly was steeped into the model and all that it involved, and it was a fairly successful, if that's the right word, Chapter 11 proceeding, where the medical groups were able to buy themselves back from the bankrupt debtor. And anyway, that got me into a very public kind of a trade association-like position.
Okay.
And then the next thing I know, I was interviewed for, hired for this job.
Okay, so when you say the model, a lot of our folks out there may not be as familiar with accountability, or physician and accountable care, things like that. Can you walk us through what the model is or what it means?
So I often, we often use the word model to describe the delegated model here in California, where the health plan delegates down to, sophisticated medical groups like CAPG members, almost all the functions associated with delivering care. So there's the delivery of the care, but there's also the payment of claims to all physicians, the payment of all monies that are due to physicians and sometimes to hospitals, all of the credentialing function, all of the quality and utilization review functions. Many of the things that health plans typically do elsewhere outside of California are done in California by the groups themselves in what has now become known as the delegated model. But there's a little more to the model than just delegation. It's also a care delivery model that involves coordination and accountability. The coordination is making organized and rational a highly dysfunctional kind of a system generally. So that's job number one. But to do it in a way where the group is accountable for cost and quality. And that's done by virtue of the way the groups are paid, which is called capitation.
Yep.
And also coupled with the pay-for-performance program in California, which measures all these groups on their performance on a number of quality measures and other domains, which makes them responsible for both high quality and low cost. And that's the model.
Great. Well, thanks for clarifying.
Okay.
So CAPG, what is CAPG?
So CAPG is a professional association composed of physician groups that practice within the model. Was the case that all of them derived at least some of their revenue from prepaid capitation. We've changed that and morphed it to evolve with the times now that we have more share savings kinds of medical groups, take ACOs, for example, and other product lines, PPO, ACO, et cetera, that are developing such that some of these groups might not receive capitation, but they're good exemplars of coordinated care, demonstrating all the attributes of coordinated care. So if they make it over that hurdle, then they are eligible for CAPG membership. So within our membership, we have virtually all of these multi-specialty medical groups and IPAs in California and another now 50 or more groups outside of California that belong to CAPG. I think our membership is close to 300 all told.
Great.
And comprising of spanning a footprint now of 44 states, I think we've decided, and Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia, not to leave out those two.
Nice.
So we have now a large geographic spread, but we represent, as I was saying earlier, I think the model that the country is adopted for the future. Certainly the Affordable Care Act, and as we read the tea leaves, this is the model for the future, coordinated accountable care. And that's CAPG is the spearhead of that movement.
And just for people that might not know, we keep saying CAPG, we're all familiar. What does CAPG actually stand for?
It was the California Association of Physician Groups. Okay.
Right.
So in a bold and brilliant move a couple years ago, we de-Californiaized it, and it is now merely the acronym CAPG.
Right. Okay.
So if you think IBM or ARC or Kentucky Fried Chicken, they are now known by acronyms only. So we expected, and I'm sort of smiling as I say this, that everyone would instantly recognize CAPG as indeed being the very organization that had previously been the California Association of Physician Groups. And we included a tagline, the voice of accountable physician groups, to make it easier. But indeed, the name is a challenge because not everybody across the country knows CAPG, nor do they know its origins and history and so on. So it's a good question. And stay tuned. Here's a news flash. The day could come in the near future where we change that name.
Okay.
You heard it first here.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. May I ask timeline or no comment on timeline?
I'm advised by advisors that January 1 is a good time of the calendar to make a name change.
Okay. So stay tuned.
That's all I'm going to say.
You heard it first here.
That's right. So you obviously represent physician groups like we've been talking about. Most physicians, I think people would agree, have gotten into medicine to help people. They take the Hippocratic Oath. They're there to serve people. However, healthcare has made it very complicated to be a physician. So briefly for the audience, can you explain a little bit of the complexities of kind of the way that healthcare has been and the challenges that it's created for physicians?
Well, for physicians that run their own practices, as many do, so across the United States, it's still the case that a majority of practicing physicians are in small groups, sometimes solo practice or 2, 3, 5, 10 physicians, but small. So those are small businesses. And operating a small business of any type is a huge undertaking. I mean, there's a lot of work associated with that. And so that was always the case with even Marcus Welby and others. But it's been made more complicated in recent years, really with the addition of all of the different quality programs and so much that's been ushered in the way of rules and regulations that hold physicians accountable for their practice. And they impair their autonomy to a certain extent. They're less sort of cowboys and autonomous as they used to be.
Right.
So indeed, it has burdened physicians that are operating in small business arrangements a lot. However, many physicians are now in employed models. We see that with Kaiser Permanente and other similar physician groups. And of course, there's been a large trend of late of physicians being acquired by hospital systems and others and moving from this sort of, sole proprietorship kind of business model into an employed model. So the picture's changed, and indeed it's variable depending upon which physician we're talking about and where that physician practices.
Yeah. We had Dr. Ashby Wolf, who's the chief medical officer for CMS in this region, on right when MACRA was coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Just without going too far on an aside, does something like MACRA help bring being a physician kind of into the future or into the present with alternative payment models? Is that something that actually helps, or is it just another regulation that physicians are having to learn?
Oh, I think it helps in a very, very big way. In fact, while the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare as it's also called, has attracted all the headlines and attention from a sort of physician and physician group standpoint, I think MACRA is actually more impactful because it basically is a kind of a mandate with incentives. Better to call it a program with incentives than a mandate, but it leaves physicians with little choice, in my opinion, such that they have to move from fee-for-service to value.
Right.
So this is the movement from volume to value. Volume is typically thought of as the fee-for-service payment methodology, physician paid per click, per service. They provide a system that incents more volume and more intensity of services and is thought to contribute to the sort of runaway cost inflation that we have. And it's also thought to be a barrier to the kind of quality initiatives that we're trying to roll out around the country. So that's fee-for-service. And MACRA allows that to continue within one of its two main sort of options, the MIPS option, but it makes it hard, frankly. And there's a lot of arithmetic underlying that, but that being the case, MACRA is, for CAPGE, a big tailwind in terms of our effort to bring more coordinated and accountable care across the country. So it is incenting physicians to look into alternative payment models, whether they're ACOs or bundled payment arrangements. So it is a big push on the movement from volume to value.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
One other thing that we see, I think, with this big push and also kind of a well-documented physician shortage in some places is the use of other licensed staff, NPs, PAs, case management, social work, those kinds of groups to help with not only the growing number of patients who need healthcare, but also kind of move into these new models. How does CAPGE work with some of those other groups as well?
So this is central to our philosophy, basically. This is the movement from, a single physician in a single exam room, 12 by 15, seeing, 28 patients per day, 20 minutes each, like that. The movement away from that and into sort of a team-based practice is indeed a cardinal feature of coordinated and accountable care as we see it. So we have programs within CAPGE that are trying to help that very thing right now. But indeed, the much more ideal sort of model, if I can use that word, is a team-based practice where you do have a physician as sort of pilot of the ship, but his work is supported and in many cases executed by a team, a multi multidisciplinary team composed of pharmacists, nurse practitioners, social workers sometimes, right. Sometimes transportation even, all to enable the physician to focus on the whole of the population, all to enable that physician to focus on that percentage, small relatively, that have the largest needs, and basically expand access and provide better care by individuals operating at the top of their license. You hear those words right. frequently.
Yeah.
So it's just more rational and efficient way to deliver care. And among other things, not only is it produce higher quality at lower cost, it also produces higher physician satisfaction, a key ingredient, we think.
Right. Absolutely. And so as also part of representing the physicians and the groups that they work with across their those multidisciplinary teams, you also, we were talking off mic a little bit, but you spend a lot of time in D.C. Mm-hmm. Advocating for physician groups, obviously. Have the lawmakers in D.C. been receptive to CAPG and see you kind of as an ally as all these things are changing?
Very, very much so. We are one of a very few organizations that are seen as being in the vanguard of this movement from volume to value. And very enthusiastically. I mean, there are those out there, indeed, that see the movement, and they'll catch on one of these days, and they're a little resistant now, and the status quo feels pretty good, thank you. There are a few that are in the position of CAPG being very, very bullish and aggressive, basically, about this movement. So that differentiates us, to be sure, and makes us also of interest to these legislators and regulators because they know that CAPG knows of what it speaks. We have been delivering coordinated accountable care, oftentimes capitated with global capitation, which is sort of the destination point. We'll talk right. more about that in a minute. We've been doing that, many of them, for 20 or 30 years. So my members know what they're talking about and thus are in a position to help export that know-how in a variety of ways, some of it osmotic, but in many cases with our educational program, webinars and the like and so on. So good example that hit right on your question is that here recently, CMS and CAPG entered into an agreement where we would co-brand and co-produce a series of webinars for the physicians across the country on how to do well in MACRA, specifically in MIPS. Mm-hmm. So I think one of our webinars has been held, and there are four more to come, each on a different domain within MIPS. But that very agreement, it's rare for CMS to select out of the universe of physician organizations, but one to help it do this, and then into co-brand with CAPG, we think is pretty significant. And they've done it because we have that know-how. So yeah. we're in a position to help educate and export that know-how to help accelerate the movement from volume to value across the country.
So. Would people find those webinars through CAPG's website or through the CMS website?
Both.
Both. Okay, great. Yep. And just for those of us who aren't involved in DC all the time, can you just give us a brief snapshot of both the opportunities and the challenges that are created just in working with lawmakers in general? Because you represent the 44 states. And so obviously those have not competing interests, but different realities, I guess. So you're used to representing a diverse population, but I think that lawmakers definitely represent that as well. So what are some of the opportunities and challenges there?
Well, I think the biggest challenge for the legislators and almost all of us is that underlying all of this is the affordability crisis. Healthcare is indeed very expensive. So expensive, in fact, that it's crowding out other areas of expense that are of high need and interest to legislators. So, healthcare costs now nationally are impinging on monies that would otherwise be used for social programs, defense, the arts, transportation, infrastructure, and the like. So they're cognizant of the fact that where healthcare consumed maybe 6% of the GDP 25 years ago, we're at 18 now, and it's projected. I mean, the trend line just continues inexorably up. I think I read earlier that by 2025 that people will figure we'll be at 22% of the GDP. So they're acutely aware of that at the legislative level, and they're, of course, acutely aware of that at the dinner table around the country too, yeah. is high deductibles and premiums and the like. Crowd out family vacations, crowd out junior going to the university, et cetera. So really the burning fire underneath everything we talk about here is really cost inflation. And so that's an opportunity and a challenge. Sort of shooting from the hip and remembering your question as best I can. Certainly one of the challenges is that it's such a complex industry.
Yeah.
It is this interesting mosaic of governmental, private, public, you know, fee-for-service here, capitated there. It is so complex that it is hard to move. It is a sixth of the country, so it is indeed a huge tanker, and ocean tankers are very hard to move. And then, frankly, to quote our president, it's hard to know about. It's hard to understand. I mean, who would have known that it was so complex? It's, frankly, pretty esoteric and complex. The whole conversation recently with the American Health Care Act has been an object lesson in my opinion, legislators coming to learn rapidly the nuances of insurance theory, risk pool theory. I don't think those that I've talked with, many of them, knew a lot about the nuances of risk pools. And now they do as they try and craft, you know, a bill to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. So it's big, it's complex, it's esoteric. That's a challenge.
Well said. I wish healthcare was easy. My family is relatively young and healthy, and it's an issue for us with our expenses. And we're actually, we've seen our costs increase. So, but maybe there's benefit to that too. So we'll see. So one of the things we see a lot, Zach and I, in our day jobs is opportunities with other industries. You mentioned private earlier, the private industry, and we're seeing the private industry with assisted living, board and cares, non-medical home care start to really have an impact and even get some grant funding to help with transitional care. And we're seeing the benefits. Do you think managed care organizations or accountable care groups will start potentially funding more of this traditionally private pay industry, or do you see any benefits there?
Well, I think one thing I picked up in your question is what I'll refer to as sort of site of care. So you've made mention of home care, for example. Home is a site of care. So too is the hospital. So one of the things that's going on here is moving patients to more appropriate levels, sites of care. So historically, our hospitals have been available for rescue care, and so acute episodes would be admitted into the hospital, and that's where so much of the care was focused in recent decades, right?
Right.
So more recently, as you guys, I think, know probably as well as I, there's been a movement of patients out of the hospital, and then sometimes it's a step-down kind of a unit, SNFs or long-term care, but very often now the home. And so it's indeed very much a part of a coordinated and accountable care to have the patient in the right place. And oftentimes that's the home, well supported by nurses and other mid-levels, as they're sometimes called, where the post-discharge, post-acute care has been rendered, where the acute care has been avoided and instead treated at the home. So that process of moving patients into the right location is thought to produce higher quality and lower costs. So we're all over that.
Very good. Now, one thing that we haven't talked about previously is reimbursement for transitional care or transitional care consults. And I was curious if CAPG has been involved in that, how physicians, how they feel about their reimbursement rates, things like that.
Well, I'll start with a general answer, which is to say, you know, we have sort of legacy payment systems, and think, for example, the Medicare fee schedule. And oftentimes those legacy systems don't recognize more modern modes of care, right? So, for example, it's only been in recent years that they've added billing codes for some care that's delivered in the home, but only a few such billing codes. Generally, the home is still sort of ignored by the fee schedule in original Medicare, far less so when it comes to Medicare Advantage, although, again, another Medicare program, I'm getting into the weeds. But basically, I think the generalized comment I would make is payment systems have to catch up with what you guys and many of us are doing in terms of home care and the like.
Yeah, no, well said. So one pretty neat thing that I was made aware of recently thanks to actually one of your colleagues who had a comment about it, is you've been nominated to be on the ballot of Modern Healthcare's Top 100 Influential Leaders in Healthcare. And you've been with CAPG and in healthcare for a couple of decades now, or
right.
I guess in your law practice, maybe 3 decades even. Looking back on your career, maybe share with us a story where you would look back and maybe tell your grandchildren down the road, man, this is neat. I got to be a part of this.
Well, the first comment I'll make about the Modern Healthcare survey and the top 100, yes, they put the face of an individual, and it could conceivably be Don Crane's face that lands in that top 100. But I hastily add that it's really CAPG. I mean, the rules of the game, they pick the individual, but it isn't Don Crane at all here, in my personal opinion. It has to do with CAPG and our membership and what we represent and what we do collectively. So it would be a nice thing if we find ourselves on that list. That would be a feather in my hat, and we'll happily take it. So your question is, looking back historically, what have been sort of the biggest things that would cause me to say perhaps my grandkids, hey, this was big in my life or something? Well,
yeah.
I think that for CAPG, and you know, this is to a certain extent being in the right place at the right time, but to be seen as one of the leaders of a national movement, in this case from volume to value, transforming the American healthcare system, and to be seen in the vanguard of that is generally a big deal, and is very gratifying and very, very exciting and inspiring. It makes me and others around here work very hard because we're very mission-driven and passionate about trying to achieve that objective. So that's a pretty big deal, and that's what I would say to my grandkids, I think.
Absolutely. I know having purpose is important for all of us, and it's a great purpose to be involved in that.
Well, and kind of jumping off of that, you obviously lead now a large organization, but it seems like the future of our country's healthcare system is in a state of constant flux nowadays. Large organizations like CAPG, just like hospitals or other major health groups and health systems, they have different challenges, but they have the same running theme of not being able to take a wait and see approach to what is coming. So how do you view leadership of your organization, even with the future being uncertain of where we're going?
So there's no question that others within this industry have to pay attention to which way the wind's blowing by the hour, because it may affect reimbursement and thus affect shareholder value and on. So, but for CAPG, that's not so, because what we represent is a model of care, and that model is nonpartisan, and that model will have value to anybody and everybody, whoever's in the White House and whoever's running the House and the Senate, because I don't think there's anybody that would quarrel with the idea of lower cost and higher quality and higher patient satisfaction and higher physician satisfaction. It's essentially nonpartisan, and that's what we are and who we are. So, you know, we're highly interested in the American Healthcare Act, highly interested in the conversations about single payer, interested in what might become the Affordable Care Act, but that's, and we're not casual about any of that,
right.
But nonetheless, that's background, because what's on the foreground for us is the delivery model.
Right. And so I think this is a good opportunity to circle back to something that you said earlier that kind of piqued my interest. You had mentioned something about global capitation. Sure. Can you give us an idea of what that is?
So I'll start again by repeating what I said about fee-for-service, because it's the great comparator against what capitation is measured against. And fee-for-service is the per-click methodology, one service, one bill, one payment, right? Capitation, however, is different in that it's prospective, it's paid in advance. It's designed to cover an entire population, not just Don Crane's sprained ankle, but the whole population of employees of a given employer, or a whole population within a region or the like. So it's prospective, it's population-based, and while sometimes risk-adjusted, and we can talk about that in a minute or two, it really is paid without regard to the level of services that are eventually actually delivered. So the recipient of the capitation could conceivably make a profit if the population is somehow healthy or kept healthy, such that the level of services is below the level of capitation.
Yeah.
If, however, the population is poorly managed and the people get sicker, then the cost of taking care of that population will rise and will outstrip the capitation revenue and produce a loss for the group.
Yeah.
So you can quickly see what that does to incentives. All of a sudden, the recipient of the capitation, in most cases it's a physician group, could sometimes be a hospital, think Maryland,
yeah,
all of a sudden has to go, wow, for me to generate a profit, which we need to keep our doors open and keep our employees employed, we need to keep that population healthy.
Yep.
Thus, the great premium paid on prevention, early intervention, self-management by patients, and even home care for you guys. So it all of a sudden changes the thinking entirely and concentrates the mind around wellness of the population.
Yeah. Just kind of bouncing off of that, it's been in the news just recently that they've officially put a hold on rolling out more of the alternative payment models, the different, with the hip replacements, the, yep, the lower extremities, and some of those different models. Do you still see the healthcare industry kind of as a whole moving towards that kind of a capitated system, or do you think that that's at kind of a wait and see moment right now?
No, I do see it moving inexorably. Okay, so there's a deep and wide river moving along towards value. There may be regulatory changes that move the boats and their relative positions on the water around a little bit. So you're referring to a delay of, I think it's the cardiac bundle,
right,
and the joint replacement bundle. And I think about a 90-day delay as they try and sort things out. And indeed, the new Secretary of Health, Tom Price, may fiddle further with some of those.
Yeah.
And so the fiddling will happen on the margins,
right,
but the river will continue to flow towards the sea. And the reason I say that with such certainty is that it's market-driven. It rises, comes out of the employer world. It comes out of the state government world. It isn't just CMS.
Yeah.
It's broad-based.
And I think one thing that people all across the industry can agree on is that the move towards value-based actually has moved things towards a more patient-centered care model. So I hope that it continues to move that way. One other kind of deep river that's flowing and not turning around that we try to ask all our guests about is technology in the healthcare space. You have a unique perspective representing physician groups. How is technology really impacting those physician groups? And is there anything coming that you're kind of excited about technology-wise? Or what do you think will have the biggest impact?
So, you know, the short answer is we're very excited about it all and bullish on it. I mean, it creates headaches.
Sure.
There's footnotes to what I'm saying. But in the main, when you want to coordinate a host of providers in delivering appropriate and coordinated care to a patient or a population, you've got to link them somehow. And that's best done with IT, right?
Yeah.
And so now we're able to do that in ways we were never able to do that before. So just the connecting everyone on the larger team, the whole community of physicians and physician extenders that bring the deliver the care, that's critically important. But the next piece of it that I think is part of the answer to this question is the data part. Okay, so I think of that as sort of part of the technology mm-hmm. solution. So like never before, we now are able to store data, transmit data, analyze data, and then use it both for patient-centered, you know, bedside care at the point of care, but also in managing the population. Where are all the diabetics? How are we treating them? Are they getting what they need? So medical directors and the like are now able to peer into the, you know, the big data, as it were,
right,
and manage the population better, deploy resources more intelligently.
Yeah.
So when you're able to connect everyone and then draw on good information, and these two things come together with the IT sort of revolution, as it were, you get better care.
Yeah. One thing that we have also talked about on this show even is a move towards being able to, you had mentioned too, points of care, being able to connect with people and patients where they are.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that really blew us away when we were talking with Dr. Wolf about MACRA was that there wasn't even a billing code for physicians to bill for time they spent on the phone with someone or FaceTiming with someone or text messaging with one of their patients to connect with them where they are. Do you see that as a movement, like across the groups that you represent, do you see trying to connect with people even outside of the office and not in person as a movement that continues?
Most definitely. We'll start with a payment on it. So Ashby, who holds a huge reputation in this part of the world as being excellent, by the way, she's pointing to the absence of billing codes for some of these things, telehealth and the like. Some of that's moving a little bit, but slowly, and it will never move really well, in my opinion. It's hard to get enough billing codes to reflect all of the kinds of services and care that can be rendered for a patient. The beauty of capitation is it's paid, and then the recipient of the capitation does what's necessary, whether there's a billing code or not, and of course there isn't one in a capitated model.
Right.
If it's a home visit and it needs to be made, they make it.
Right.
If it's a phone call that has to be done, they do it, irrespective. If it takes five nurses instead of one, they deploy all five.
Yeah.
So that's the beauty of capitation. It's the application of the right amount of resource where it counts, and oftentimes more than would have hitherto been delivered in a fee schedule world. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the beauty of how the capitation works. And remind me as to the balance of your question, so I don't wander too far.
Oh no, that was perfect. We've talked with physician groups who are taking that to a more private practice level, kind of on the private pay basis, where patients can connect with them. But I think we've also seen it in larger healthcare groups and physician groups where that is just becoming more of a reality, especially as they start to treat a younger patient population. And so I was just curious if you see that continuing along. So I think your answer was great.
Sure.
And I noticed, Zach, yeah, that the groups that we've seen that all have some type of capitated
right
payment.
Right.
Yep.
So it speaks right alongside Don.
Yep.
So just before we wrap up here, the CAPG National Conference is next month. So what can you tell us a little bit about the conference, who attends, what people can expect there?
So this is our annual conference. It's in San Diego at the Manchester Hyatt on June 22, 23, and 24. It's annual. It's, I think, by far and away the largest healthcare conference in California each year. We've been doing it in a big way for lots of years, including well before the beginning of my tenure. And it enjoys a big reputation of being a mecca for coordinated care. So we'll have something on the order of 2,000 registrants, early reports indicate, and most all of them true believers, highly interested in this model, right? And it's a serious meeting. We play hard, embarrassingly hard, I must say. So there's indeed that, but there's also hard work. So if you guys get a chance, you're cordially invited. If you take a look at our program, you'll see that there's a lot there in terms of policy and politics. We'll be debating on stage pros and cons to the ACA and so forth. So there'll be a lot of policy and politics, but there will be also a lot of how to deliver coordinated care, because we know that probably a third of the attendees this year will be from outside of California. And they'll be coming because they want to learn how to do coordinated care. So if you look at our breakout sessions across the whole thing, it's how to do better in MIPS, how to do an APM, how to use hospitalists, how to, use your IT to manage a population. So much of the how-to, basically. Because a big pillar underneath CAPG isn't just advocacy. It's always been the case that we've done sort of intramural education and shared best practice and helped one another get better. But now with our national expansion and where the country is and what we think our mission is to proliferate coordinated care, we're trying to export the knowledge outside. So we're in the education business. And yeah, this is a part of it, this very conference. So the conferences and so on. So come on down.
Great. Well, thank you so much. And thank you so much for sitting down with us. We know you're back and forth between California and the East Coast. We really appreciate you taking the time. I know the listeners are going to really enjoy. This is an enlightening conversation. So thanks a lot.
Good. Thank you. My pleasure.
Thanks again, Don. And folks, again, you heard about the conference. When is the last time people can register for that, Don?
They can walk up to the front desk as long as they have greenbacks in their hand and we'll let them in.
June 22nd to 24th.
Yeah. But I think you go to the webpage. No, there is not a deadline. There is registration itself does via the webpage close on some date that's unknown to me. It's above my pay grade.
Yeah.
And it's typically a couple weeks before the conference. So if you don't hit that date, you can still come, show up, and you can register at the desk.
Very good, folks. So this episode, when you hear this, when it's released, if you hear it when it's released, you'll still have time to register for the event or show up for the event
good
down in San Diego. And where can people find out more information again, Don, about CAPG?
Well, go to our webpage, CAPTCHE.org, and you'll find a wealth of information.
Fantastic.
Very good. Yep. Zach, Don, thanks so much. Everybody, thanks again, and stay tuned for future episodes of Pop Health Podcast. If you're listening on iTunes or Stitcher or pophealthpodcast.com, know that there are other places to listen. So again, you can listen on iTunes, Stitcher, and pophealthpodcast.com. And again, we are in the nomination process soon for the podcast awards. So stay tuned for more information there as well. Thanks, everybody.